Hello and welcome to the Emerald City Video Podcast. This is Russ Burlingame. I am here to introduce the show for Oscar Night 2017. We're going to be talking about La La Land and the Blues Brothers. Two of our, well, I'll stop short of saying favorite musicals, but two musicals that exist in the universe. Yes, they do. With me tonight to discuss La La Land are Dave Nielsen, Dan Fecto, and Logan Brechneider. That's right. All of us together in one room at one time, watching a movie and drinking heavily. That's right, folks. You might hear me for about 10 minutes in the La La Land segment, then I disappear. I went to the bathroom, and I never came back. Yeah, I had a lot to drink that day. That's the effect La La Land has on people. Anyway, the second half of the show is me and Logan Brechneider, just the two of us, making it if we try? No, just the two of us talking about The Blues Brothers. That's a movie we liked a lot better, and rather than just kind of lavish it with praise, we did kind of what Zach and I did when we talked about Suicide Squad and Ghostbusters, where we tried to compare and contrast a little bit and talk about why the older movie succeeds where the newer one fails, and where we think the newer one might end up in kind of longer-term esteem once tonight's over and it does or does not win its best picture. Hopefully you're going to enjoy that. I'm going to take a quick break. I'm going to play some music or a trailer or something like that for you guys. And then when I come back, it's going to be all of us talking about La La Land.
Come on, let's go with the Archie Show.
I'm Russ Burlingame, and if you're listening to this, you probably know me as the co-host of Emerald City Video Podcast. I'm also the co-host... What?
I know it.
You know it? That's great. Everybody, this is my daughter, Samantha. And Samantha is here to tell you about my other show. Sammy, can you say, everybody listen to Archie Digest. Hey man, this is the kind of high production value you get when I'm cutting trailers at the kitchen table. But yeah, everybody listen to Archie Digest, a Riverdale podcast. That show is over at archiedigest.podbean.com. We look at every episode of the new CW show, Riverdale, the day that it airs. And we have a whole lot of insight. My co-hosts Craig Byrne and Chris Hainer and I all have been to the set a couple of times. We've all talked to many of the producers, writers, actors, everybody involved with that show. You're going to want to hear what we have to say. And hey, you can find it on iTunes now. Subscribe, rate us, all that good stuff. Archie Digest, a Riverdale podcast. It's Sammy approved.
Everything's Archie.
All right, so let's talk about La La Land.
All right.
Sure.
First up, anybody take a swing at it?
There is no reason in the world that this should be nominated for any award. And I believe the only reason it is because the Academy who votes is able to liken that movie, La La Land, to the older style of movies that they grew up with. And it's just so obviously an award bait show.
Oh, that's the thing that kills me, is that every year you have like five movies that are so clearly awards bait in one way or another. This one is like if you made a TV show that is, each episode is one element of awards bait, and you throw it together over five episodes. That's what this is.
I would think it would function better as a TV show, as a full season, like sort of expanded, sort of decompressed storytelling. And you had those musical episodes, or you had those musical interludes or something like that. I just feel like it's so blatantly pushing for that, that it's so full of itself. And when we were watching it, I was so mind-boggled that it got as much praise as it did, because I don't see it. It's way too heavy-handed. It's way overacted. The musical numbers aren't that good. I mean, it's no Hamilton, for sure. Like, how it garnered the level of acclaim that it has received is utterly beyond me, because it's not terrible, but it's not that good. If anything, I would say it's forgettable. Like, I'm not going to be able to, if you ask me in a week what happened in La La Land, some people sang and danced, there was a Hollywood story, I don't even remember the people who were in it. Like, it's not
Bill Cosby.
If only. That would be some great stunt casting. No, if it was because, listen, but I live in Los Angeles.
And the pudding pops.
And the pudding pops in Los Angeles.
It's at least looks different from movies that get made these days. It's very, like, technicolor, pastel in your face, and it's not... I wouldn't say it's, like, the cinematography's great, but it's not terrible either. No. Like, it's okay.
So,
it's not a... I want to be clear. I know we're going to hate on it.
Positive things to say about this.
Me too. And that's I'm
the
trying.
Thing. Well, the thing is, I don't think it's a bad movie. People.
I don't think it's a bad movie either. I don't think any of us think it's a bad movie, yeah, but it's a matter of, like, whether it's deserving the acclaim that it receives.
No way.
So, like we were talking about before, if we were going to do a double feature, which I know we're not going to be able to do tonight, the Pennies from Heaven movie with Steve Martin and Bernadette Peters, like, that could be great. But it's a throwback to Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers and all these sort of, like, dance comedies and stuff like that. But then they try and do all this other dramatic stuff with it. But there's so many things about the way that it's shot. And I'll say this. I think the performances were great. I think the performances were really spot on. What I have issue with is the pacing and the direction and stuff like that. And when you're talking about, like, a best movie of the year contender for the Academy Awards or something like that, this doesn't even remotely qualify.
See, I will give you the direction and the cinematography. I agree with you, it wasn't great. I actually think the pacing was one of the places where the movie shines, partly because the device they use to break it up into seasons is axe. And they actually...
Okay, yeah.
And they actually did, if you paid attention, they actually did use the song and dance numbers as almost act breaks.
Yeah, you are absolutely correct with that.
So, I actually think the pacing was one of the places where it shined. And I agree with you about the acting was well done. I think the story... I'll say the story itself was trite. It was very dry.
What was the story?
I'm gonna really boil it.
It starts out with a massive plot dump.
Yep.
About how Ryan Gosling's character—I don't even remember if they even had names.
Ryan Gosling's character has
had some project, like, stolen out from under him, so he's moved in with his sister, and Emma's character is just a struggling actress.
I don't think he moved in with his sister. I just think he moved into, like, a crappy apartment from his sister's.
Also, can we agree, like, if that was his sister, is there any way any of us could tell the difference between Emma Stone's character and his sister? Because they looked exactly the same.
There's a deeper issue here of Ryan Gosling chasing after a woman who looks just like his sister.
Was that part of the plot?
It's a subtext. Maybe. I don't know.
Maybe. I would think that the plot, to me, really boils down to two people who are chasing their dreams. Ryan Gosling has had more bumps in the road than... Well, no.
No, they're both struggling.
Struggling people chasing their dreams meet, fall in love, everything's great, and, like, everything happens when you fall in love and it's new. Everything seems amazing and great, and even your dreams seem attainable. And when you get your dreams, or make that big push to actually get to your dreams, it doesn't always work out how you expected it to, and that's why they broke up. Mm-hmm. They got to that point, he got into a band, she did her one-woman play, and it didn't go the way they expected it to. It caused friction, they broke up, they went their separate ways, they actually did end up meeting their dreams, and that's where you get to the end of the movie, and to me...
Is that what happened?
Yes, that is exactly what happened. Yeah, and at the end of the movie, they're not together, but they have a chance meeting at his club, which was his dream.
But so they both met their own individual goals, yes, just not together.
And, right. And that was the ending of the movie where
if you hadn't said that, if you hadn't explained it the way that you just did, I really would not have ever been able to understand that's what happened in the
alcohol
movie.
Alcohol related or just...
No. But to me, I understand the ending, which is what most people don't like about it, which I actually, I think it was very obvious, but I understand why people don't like it, but I think it's important because the whole ending where he's playing his song is supposed to invoke the emotion of, that's him and his feelings about his life. That's why he's been a success, is because he's finally stopped living in the past and started writing true stuff to him and his life.
Embracing himself.
And
I do that all the time.
Well, we all do. She comes in, he sees her, he knows
what's going on. How did none of us just make all the obvious masturbation jokes we could have just made when you said that?
That's what I
did. How did anybody pass on that?
I made the obvious masturbation joke.
What?
I don't know.
I guess it was a little too subtle then.
What?
No, it was a little too blatant. Because it was like, where do you go from there?
I mean, I go spend another 15 minutes in my room.
Alright, so speaking of masturbation.
Why?
Well, because what else do I like to talk about? I mean, that seems to be my role in this podcast,
this
is talking
is
about
just
masturbation.
Masturbatory fantasy for the Academy Awards.
Thank you. That's what I'm trying to say.
Gotcha.
It feels like such a masturbatory exercise of like self-flagellation that it's all these pretty people, all these well-written music, all these well-choreographed dance numbers, and these guys dance their asses off. I mean, you can't really argue with that. But, well, okay, they try.
The choreography could have been better.
Agreed.
A couple scenes. But these are two people who aren't singers or dancers.
They
cast for some reason.
But, so, they...
Keep going.
Sure.
They make it... They make it the best sort of musical drama, comedy, romance thing that they can, but I feel like it tries to be everything all at once. Mm-hmm. Like, it tries to be too many different things. If it was just going to be a comedy, okay.
What was that? Was there any comedy in it?
I mean, I thought during, like, the scenes between the two, like, romantic leads, they were trying to push for some kind of comedy there.
Oh, yeah, the 80s party.
That was my favorite part of the whole movie.
Yeah.
Was
that actually,
crazy
the
80s, like, lounge act thing at the party.
I just feel like
the most energy
it totally
I saw in the whole
suffers
movie.
From a lack of consistent tone. That, like, it's supposed to be this, then it's supposed to be that, then it's supposed to be this and that and the other thing.
Yeah.
And they never really, it seems like the movie never really figured out what it wanted to be over the course of the entire thing. And the whole thing was what? Christ, almost 2 hours long,
that.
Probably,
what considers the feature?
Fuck, we're doing it again.
if you can't decide what kind of a movie you want to make, then okay, make a mess of a film, and that was a mess of a film. But it's a mess of a film that's getting considered for Academy Awards, like already.
Big
you know,
question of the night: is this a date movie? Would you take your date to this?
Oh, God, no.
Really?
No.
See, I think this would be a huge hit with the ladies.
I think that, this movie just make everybody upset with each other and, like...
You think?
I think
here's why.
That's a romance where the two people don't get together in the end. That's
here's why, because I think...
Lost.
If you brought a chick with you to this film, you might... anybody... If you're a dude who likes dudes, if you're a lady who likes ladies, whatever, not gender specific, if you brought a person with you to this film, you might leave with such wildly differing opinions because we all agreed this thing was kind of a mess.
But you hit the nail on the head about that. It's not our movie.
Right. But if you happen to go to this film in the theater with a person who loved it and you hated it, you would probably have a very long conversation after you left the theater about why you liked it or didn't like it or whatever, both of which are valid. You know, I can see why people would like this movie. I really can.
Yeah,
I get it, but it's just not my kind of flick, our kind of flick. It's just not for us.
There's no intelligence to it.
Yes.
It's just it's stupid candy bits about, like, oh, these two people like each other, but life just drives them apart.
And then it pokes
you at the end of the thing with that fantasy about, like, but it could have been like this, and
okay,
it's
but
not.
Here's an example of how that kind of thing works, though, is Drive, another Ryan Gosling movie, where you're talking about two people who can't really end up together. And their lives are so disparate and they're so effed up and they're both such strong characters, but you at least tell a compelling story in a strong way. And this movie tells a story. It's not like it doesn't tell a story, but it
doesn't tell it the best way.
This doesn't have a very... Thank you, Lana. There's no concrete reason in this why the two of them, if they have such strong lingering feelings for each other, why they don't just get back together when, like...
Right. What would be the big problem? What's the big obstacle?
Where's the drunken phone call that, like, reunites them one evening? When you're like, hey, I saw your movie, by the way. I'm, like, a mega superstar now, too. Isn't this crazy? We should hook up.
I haven't actually seen Drive, but the movie I was going to kind of, as a parallel to, was The Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Yeah.
That movie does a great job of showing you why those two characters aren't going to work together.
Ultimately tied to each other.
And this movie doesn't. So that question, Dan, is perfect. Why didn't that happen? There's no reason why these two people shouldn't
be together. And then Emma Watson's character just keeps meeting and dating Emma Stone. right. Emma Watson would have been in this, but isn't.
Right.
Get married to the Emma Stone-Watson.
Yes, oh yes.
We're going to drift off into porn territory here if I'm not careful.
I lost what I was even talking about.
The ending of the movie.
Emma Stone's character, she just keeps dating these faceless chump nobodies. She's got one at the beginning of the movie.
Yep.
She's married to one at the end. Uh-huh. Like, for a movie that's supposedly, making a statement about, romance, and that, sometimes, life just tears you apart, and it's but it's really still special and stuff. Who is this fucking, cardboard cutout guy that she drags into
the same person? I couldn't tell.
I couldn't tell either.
They have the same doofus haircut.
Yeah.
So, you can softball the ending of a movie like that, and I've seen plenty of movies I wish I could call one to memory right now, but it's a little late.
That's the point. But
If you can softball the ending and be like, okay, I can acknowledge that we're not going to end up together, but that we had a good time while we were with each other, and we're both having good times in our lives now, and we can sort of move on from that. That's one thing. But they don't even hardly do that. They don't even hardly suggest that.
Like I said, it ends on that lingering, but it could have been like this, and look how happy they could have been together.
Right.
And then they have they exchange these, longing smiles at each other. At the very, what the fuck?
Right.
Why would you do that?
With the understanding of a lot of great romances, you go back to Eternal Sunshine, where they do end up together. Spoiler alert. Sorry, audience.
They do, but, and that's one of the great things.
They do, but you're kind of, it's implied that they're doomed to just fall apart eventually.
But that's the thing. Yeah, that's what I'm saying is, there's a satisfying way to stick the landing.
Exactly.
With it that this movie just does not do at all.
Well, again, there's that.
And also, all of this aside, just let's be real clear about this. They frame this film in one of the most obnoxious ways I've ever seen. The big musical numbers, all the Los Angeles shit, stuff like that. I don't care. I don't live in LA. I'm not a part of that culture at all. I'm not an actor.
Yep.
I'm not any way involved in entertainment in that way, but they chose to frame it in a way where
he said on a podcast
an audience I'm not acting, man, that an audience is really going to be hard pressed to give a shit about, really is what it boils down to. So here's a whole bunch of people who you're going to be struggling to care about in the first place, who are having problems. And then all of a sudden, it goes through all these twists and turns. It's just, my biggest problem with this film is that it's so incoherent. It's between all the musical numbers and the drama between the characters. And I'm sorry, did it jump from decade to decade? I misinterpreting that?
No,
or?
but it was the style of the movie. It very much wanted to be a 1940s, 50s, or 60s. Musical movie, and there is one point in the movie where they are watching, I can't remember the title of the movie, but it's like a 1950s musical that the movie gets interrupted, so they go to the scene of the movie they were just watching, which is the observatory, and that's where it becomes technicolor and very, like, grainy.
You know what? And actually, that was one of the few scenes in the movie that I really, really liked. Like, it got surreal. Like, they almost embraced that. Like, I wish that they would have embraced the surreality and the sort of homage of the entire film.
And the ending did that, too.
Yeah.
Where it kind of, yeah. The ending kind of wrapped up, like, this is the movie you've been watching in dance numbers and like, the quick
right, big but finale. It's almost like they were trying to split the difference exactly. Of, like, having it both ways, and you just can't do that.
Yeah.
If you're going for Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers, old school, or romantic comedy, almost like a Rock Hudson kind of thing or something like that, and then surrealist, almost like Nolan, what was the Nolan movie, where the people went into outer space and their brains exploded and shit, I sound like a dumbass.
Total Recall.
No, The Fountain.
Oh, you're talking about...
With Hugh Jackman?
Yeah, that's Nolan, right?
Yes.
Okay. So if it was almost like The Fountain crossed with that, like when they went into the outer space sequence, that's what I thought of. Was like, oh, God, because it looks like The Fountain.
Oh, yeah, when they're flying and stuff. Yeah,
all that stuff. That if you could cross all those things with each other, then that would be an amazing movie. But I feel like they just split the difference in a way that didn't work.
It was poorer for it. It was just poorer for
it. It's just really annoying to see everyone dancing around in, like, 50s outfits, but then they've all got the, like, wide Galaxy Note 2 iPad tablet driving around in hybrid cars. It's like, this is just fucking stupid.
Yep.
Yeah.
No, if you're gonna commit...
The whole thing is just a big, gigantic, pretentious slap on the back for the industry itself to say, like, look how pretty and talented we are and underappreciated we are, and our failed romances are because our careers are so destined for greatness or something. It's just fucking, again, masturbatory. Like, the whole movie is just a big fucking technicolor.
It's such a hard sell because it's so many famous actors, famous directors, producers, blah, blah, blah. All these people involved are very, very famous. A high-level movie, right? Obviously, because it's being nominated for all these awards and stuff.
Yes, it's going to win Best Picture.
But is it a good movie?
All I come away with from having watched it is the frustration that I lost time watching it.
No.
Thanks.
Like, no, it's an average movie at best.
I don't think that this is going to...
Exactly.
Is anybody going to come out of this theater feeling changed? Or like, geez, I really should... You know, I got to call that person back up.
And
this movie. Thanks, La La Land.
You made me think twice about
that relationship.
We've kind of talked about it before, but this is where losing video stores is kind of hurting the movie watching public, because this is one of those things where four of us would steer people away from this movie. Sure. Our opinions are in the minority right now of this.
Sure.
Right? But we would steer people away and we would tell them our opinions, but look, like right now, yes, this is getting a lot of buzz, a lot of people are saying this. My opinion is it's not a bad movie, it's an average movie. You know, if you like these kind of movies, you'll probably love it, you'll probably do this.
But okay, but here's my question though. Who would you recommend this movie to?
I would recommend this movie to people who like musicals, but I would try to lower their expectations by saying, like, look, this is a musical in the style of the 40s and 50s. So if you don't like that style, you're probably not going to like it, and the ending is not a typical 40s and 50s ending. And I would leave it at that. Prefacing to people, like, look, like, this is a romantic story, but the ending is not gonna... You're not gonna walk away happy on this one. Like, all right. I just kind of, like, leave it at that. And but this is where that, like, video store mentality of, like, hey, like, maybe this isn't as good as people are saying kind of thing.
Yeah.
We've lost that.
Yeah,
because
we haven't. Really is in the look, obviously, we're recording this podcast right now, so we haven't lost it completely.
No, but
you're not wrong about that. Like that personalized recommendation. All right, then, who would you recommend this to?
Hipsters.
Jesus Christ. Hipsters,
like, wanted...
Says Captain Beardo over
yep,
here.
That's right.
Fuck.
Yep, my people. I'd throw this right in their faces. Fuck them.
As a joke?
Wannabe, like, creative types who need some kind of excuse for why the relationships
crumble. Who do you think...
Who do you think would watch this movie and think it's not me, it's my career.
SU film students.
Yeah.
God, I've known enough of those... Slept with enough of those. Are like,
there you go.
Who would you recommend this that you think would actually like
I just
like
said
it?
So. I think that people
he wasn't
who, like, fucking insubstantive, like...
Damn, this dude's cold-blooded.
I think that they're the kinds of people who would enjoy this. People who, like, lack substance but have too much vision.
So, Dave?
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that at all. Dave. I would say if somebody came in asking for Moulin Rouge and we didn't have a copy of it on the shelf, I would give them this.
People who dress like the people in this movie, even though it's 2017,
yep.
They have the like the bicycle with the one big front wheel.
You're mentioned
pedaling down.
You remember
the street
I mentioned while we were
mustache.
Watching it, I mentioned Baz Luhrmann a lot.
So anybody who likes a Baz Luhrmann
style of substance, I really would. It's not to say this movie had no substance whatsoever, but I think the predominant element of this movie was style.
Oh yeah,
not
absolutely.
Substance.
Absolutely.
I think we can all agree on that.
Yeah.
And I think on that note, Russ has checked himself out just for the moment.
Well, I was going to say, are we going to label this one the one where Russ...
Oh, no.
Okay, don't... Guys, keep your mouth shut. Yeah, we're just going to call this one a night.
Yeah, I think so.
It's 106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes, it's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
We're back, everybody. Kind of. This is not, in fact, the four of us talking about Pennies from Heaven as we had previously discussed, or as they had previously discussed while I was passed out in the bathroom. This is, in fact, Russ Burlingame here with Logan Brettschneider to talk about... to talk about the Blues Brothers, because it is one, an excellent musical, and two, something that we've both seen before, and we still haven't sat down and watched Pennies from Heaven. It's been about 3 weeks since we recorded our other thing, and now it's Oscar night, and we definitely want to get our La La Land analysis up in time for the Oscars, because if it wins Best Picture, I want us to be, you know, listed on iTunes so that people can find the podcast.
Makes sense. Plus, I think that our analysis of La La Land was, I don't know. I mean, I think it was fairly accurate, but
yeah, I mean, because the way you guys talked about it though, because I listened back to all or most of it the other day while I was doing dishes, and like the way you talked about it after the fact, I thought you were going to be like vicious and brutal in a way that you weren't for the like 10 minutes that I was there. But really, you were pretty even handed. Like it was a trenchant critique because nobody liked the movie, but it wasn't cruel, and it wasn't inaccurate. It was just kind of like, yeah, none of us like this movie.
And that's the thing, like, I struggled to say I didn't like it, and I know we're supposed to be talking about Blues Brothers, but and I think...
Yeah, we'll get to that in a second.
No, I know, but the thing for me is, it's not that it's a bad movie and that I disliked it, I just... It falls into that category of two things. One, it's not my type of movie. I'm not a musical person. I've never been a musical person. And two, it was so overblown in the hype. So part of me is just like, well, now I can't like it because everybody seems to love it and they're just missing the clear, obvious what this movie actually is. Mm. And it's just not made for me anyway.
That's a fair, I mean, and again, like I have a little bit more complicated of a relationship with musicals in the sense that like, I don't dislike them, at least on principle. I'm not a big musical guy, but like I certainly like I'm looking forward to there's an upcoming episode of The Flash that's going to be a musical crossover with Supergirl, because I watch both of those shows and I enjoy both of those shows. I'm excited about that. Funny enough, I think I mentioned this in the first half, but it might have been cut. One of the songs, there's two kind of main songs in that musical episode. One of them is done by Rachel Does Stuff is her name on Twitter. I can't remember her last name. She's the...
I always think she... It's not Rachel Bunch, because that's her character name in Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. But it's...
Exactly, yeah.
It's another B. Bloom. Her last name is Bloom.
Bloom, yes, thank you. She wrote one of the two kind of main songs, and the other one of the main songs is written by the folks who did La La Land.
Nice. That's awesome. I don't know. Have you caught her show, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend?
Only the first few episodes, and I really dug it, but it's a classic victim of, like, because I don't cover it for work and because I have to watch so much TV for work. I'm terrible about keeping up with anything that I'm not getting paid to watch. So I really enjoyed the bits of Super Ex-Girlfriend I've seen. They sent me the DVDs of like the first four or six episodes last year, and so I saw those.
It's really good. And again, this is from a guy who doesn't like musicals.
Yeah, they sent me the season two premiere, and I haven't watched it yet because I like the show enough that I wanted to get caught up on season one and not blow like anything that might be the second half of the season watching season two.
And speaking of somebody who has seen all of it, and you can actually catch the entire run right now on Netflix, season one and two.
Yeah. Nice.
It definitely has a narrative and a fairly important one too. I would say through that. And again, not a musical guy, I would definitely recommend it. And I think that's the big difference for me. When it comes to musicals, things like Blues Brothers, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, TV shows that incorporate musical styles in their narratives, for me, it works because they're not trying to shoehorn it in. It's usually like the ones that I can remember are things like Buffy the Vampire Slayer and some random other like episodes of like, hey, this is a musical episode. It was like part of the whole narrative, like, yeah, Scrubs, exactly. It's like part of the narrative where people are busting out into song due to a specific reason, and it's like beyond their control. But it's like everyday issues that they're singing about, and it's funny and it's poignant. And Blues Brothers, it's a lot more seamless, with a few exceptions here and there. But things like the big musical production of the, I would say, the 50s and 60s and La La Land, it's such a jarring juxtaposition for me. And like, it just takes me out of the movie experience. I'm like,
That's fair. And I think, and don't want to get too much into this, but I think that Blues Brothers 2000 is kind of a good example of what you're talking about. Because like when you watch that second movie, there are so many times when it just goes from zero to, oh shit, we're doing a song now.
Yeah.
With no real... You know, you're not really prepared for that. It just kind of happens all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And I felt like you're right. Like for a movie that felt almost beat for beat like a remake of the first movie, like so many technical things were done poorer in that movie, which is kind of why I think this one holds up in a way that the sequel doesn't.
And the two scenes that I can remember in Blues Brothers, the original, that definitely for me are the slowest parts are the Aretha Franklin diner scene. And the music store scene, because those are the two scenes where the musical numbers are very kind of like, oh, wait, we're just suddenly doing this now. All the other ones.
Yeah, I would argue a little bit on Ray's, because like the conceit of like, you know, they basically say like they're trying to get a bargain by saying that the keyboard's shitty. And he comes on and says like, oh, apparently you guys just suck. Yeah, and so like
fair, but it's so like, faintly veiled, and you know, if they kept it to that one scene and not have it spill over into the streets, I think I would have been much more with you. Aside from those two scenes, you know, it's like two scenes.
Even some of the like, you know, like Dr. John Lee Hooker. I always want to call him Dr. John, but that's not right. But like John Lee Hooker's bit is just like, he's just kind of singing on the sidewalk, but you're like, yeah, but it's Chicago. There are people singing on the sidewalk with an acoustic guitar all the time. Like he's not, he doesn't have, you know, his accompaniment with him. So it's less conspicuous.
Yeah. Exactly. and then the big musical numbers, they're at a concert. They're like performing. So it makes, no, this makes sense. You know, it's coming. It's like, well, yeah, this is part of the narrative. They are a band rather than.
Yeah. It was almost a thing where they felt like rather than break the world in order to make the music kind of fit into what they were doing, they clearly wrote a script around the idea that like, okay, well, we want to have X number of musical numbers. Where are we going to do it? How are we going to do it? Where is it going to make sense? And it's like, okay, well, we got the scene in the Pentecostal church because like people sing in churches. And so
exactly.
That and like, yeah.
All right, so I have a question for you with these two movies. So you have La La Land and you have Blues Brothers. Would you say La La Land has the better actual story than Blues Brothers. Like I'm not talking about how
it's definitely got. I don't think so. I think it's definitely got a more complete narrative, or at least a more complex one. Complex is better than complete, I think, in this case. There's more story. There's more meat on the bone. There's more for the actors to do. But I think execution-wise, like with Blues Brothers, it's a very simple, like, you're getting from point A to B, and there are other things that are more important than the story, which is, you know, there's the comedy beats, there's the car chases, there's the...
No, absolutely. And that's my point. And you just made it. It's I think that's the difference between the two movies is the execution. I think La La Land had the more interesting and complex story, and if it wasn't a musical, I would be all about that movie. And Blues Brothers, I think if you took away the musical elements, it would just be a much more trite experience. Not bad, but a much more typical comedy.
Yeah, well, and I think if you took away the musical experience from Blues Brothers, you end up with something like the 2005 Dukes of Hazzard movie.
Yes.
Like, that's not to say it was bad or that people who enjoyed that movie are wrong, but it's to say that it's not the Blues Brothers. Like, it's never, ever going to be a classic.
No, exactly. Exactly. And I think that's the big difference between the two movies is Blues Brothers is a classic because they took their source material, knew what they needed to do with it, and executed it very well. And La La Land, to me, feels like, hey, this is a great drama. Let's tack a musical onto it.
Yeah. Well, and I think part of it, honestly, is that, and this is actually a really interesting kind of thing. Like, I remember looking at, I think it was my college paper, because I think Blues Brothers 2000 actually came out in 2001. I remember writing a review for Blues Brothers 2000 at the time and actually enjoying it, like not unabashedly. Yeah. And certainly I didn't like the third act because the whole thing with the witch was just stupid.
Yeah.
But I remember enjoying it. And then like I rewatched it recently and I was like, wow, this is mostly just garbage. And I think part of the reason that a movie like Blues Brothers 2000 can fool, you know, somebody like me who I was like, and basically was in love with the original movie, is the same reason that for the fleeting moments between its release and Oscar night, a movie like La La Land can seem like the best movie in the country. And it's because it delivers exactly what people expected when they walked in the door. Like, good the point. People who went, who were excited about this thing, it's like there's a checklist of like shit that you just know La La Land is going to have, and it's all there. And it was the same thing with me with the second Blues Brothers movie. It was like, oh, but I really hope they do this, and I really hope they revisit this character, and I hope they acknowledge the fact that Jake died, and they hope, you know, blah, 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 blah. And it was like, you checked all those boxes, and so you can kind of convince yourself that that was a pleasant movie-going experience because it did everything you expected slash wanted it to do when you walked in. And it isn't until you actually step back and kind of view it a little more critically and with a little bit less about your own expectations and more about what the film's presenting, that you realize, like, yeah, there's not a lot here.
No, there. No, and I think, yeah, I mean, I think that hits it on the head. Personally, there's but a reason.
I think that's
yeah.
Well, I was going to say, I think that's the reason too that Blues Brothers, the original, holds up in a way that you wouldn't necessarily expect, because, like, as much as like most of the comedy is really dumb, like there's you know. There's a couple of really good performances, but there's no Academy Award nominated anything in this movie, I don't think.
I don't think so either.
It's the sort of movie where, like, I remember watching it for the first time with only like the SNL sketch and a vague understanding of like who the Blues Brothers were as characters and that they became a band like in real life outside of the movie later. And, like, knowing that there would be musical elements to it, but not knowing the movie was going to be a musical, and kind of walking in and having, like, that expectation that this is going to be another, like, Wayne's World-style, like, dumb, funny SNL adaptation that has a couple of musical numbers. And those expectations just being kind of blown out of the water by what the movie actually is. And so it's that weird thing again of like your own baggage and your own expectations going into a movie can totally change your perception of it, which is a thing we've talked about on the show a lot.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely.
But I feel like with Blues Brothers, that did nothing but help the movie. Whereas with something like La La Land and something like, you know, Blues Brothers 2000, the help that you'll get from that would be very, very short lived. Because I think that, like you said, there's going to be a backlash, and you've already started to see it with La La Land. Like, there's already the backlash of like, everybody loves this so much, I fucking hate it. Like, there's been a whole bunch of like clickbait articles about how this movie's garbage, it was just one of those things where, as somebody who didn't enjoy the movie, I don't begrudge those people writing those articles. I also kind of feel like they're just getting out ahead of like what 6 months is going to be like the trending thing. It's kind of like, you know, nowadays everybody, you and I think we're both working at video stores when Crash got the Best Picture.
Which I still to this day
I know that I was watched. I remember. Yeah, I own it. I don't think I watched it. I got it for like $3.99 at the Blockbuster I was working at, and you know,
I got it. I think I have a screener copy that I'm just like,
you
know, and I'm like, I should definitely watch this. It got the Academy Award. Nah, I don't care.
Yeah, well, and it's now become shorthand, you know, for a lot of people, and especially like, apparently it's a guilty white liberal movie.
Really?
Which I didn't know. Yeah, I didn't know that at the time. But like somebody, I can't remember who. You know, somebody was talking about race relations and talking about how, like, you know, you're going to vote for Trump, but then feel good about yourself because you're clearly not racist because Crash got the Best Picture. And I was just like, oh, so it's that kind of movie. Good to know. but I think La La Land, assuming it does win. Which I think that it probably will, because it's rare that you have such kind of uniform acceptance that a movie is obviously going to win and then it doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think like, the fix is
it's super common. Like if there's two or three that it's down to, that any one of those three could win and, or that something else could win because those three all competed against each other.
Right.
But when you have everybody basically saying like, oh no, this one movie's going to get it. Like I haven't heard any, like I've heard a couple of mentions of like maybe Moonlight will get it, but I haven't heard that on any kind, anything near the scale of people just assuming it's La La Land. But so I think that if La La Land does win it, you're going to see like, and that's part of why I wanted to get this podcast out before the Oscars, or at least the night of, so that I could be like, yeah, we're not reacting to this movie winning the Best Picture. This is our reaction to the film.
Well, I mean, and I don't know about you. I mean, and that's why and we do this a lot on the show where we'll take an older movie and we'll compare it to a newer movie, partly because that's what we used to do all the time at the video store. But, you know, that's also what you do in today's world of, hey, watch our stuff. You got to do something that's relevant.
Yeah.
But it's so hard. It's so hard to say, well, Blues Brothers is clearly a better movie than La La Land. You and I both think that. But we also saw it when we were in our late teens, early 20s, in preparation for a movie that was coming out that was a sequel. And this is, you know, we had heard legends and lore of this. So we've had experiences with this that cannot be duplicated by other people. short of 20 years from now when somebody says, oh, hey, you know, there's a sequel to La La Land coming out and we got to do this. And it's just one of those things where it's like, it's such a singularly unique perspective that you and I happen to share. I enjoyed Blues Brothers better than I did La La Land, but I also relate to the characters better. I like Dan Aykroyd. I like Jim Belushi.
Yeah.
I
think, too, it speaks to – oh, sorry.
Oh, I was going to say, and I like the supporting characters. I mean, you have John Candy in there. You have Carrie Fisher before she was known to be super crazy and still hot.
It's funny because, like, looking at the film through the eyes of, like, the supporting characters, first of all, it's one of those movies kind of like Bullworth where every character in this movie is, like, just a fucking fantastic character actor who you've seen a million times before. And, like, I remember when I would be at the video store where the movies like this, Like, you know, when you're entering into the system, there's the option to put in actors. We usually didn't because we were usually in a hurry.
Yeah, it was actually like, older stuff. Yeah.
Well, for me, it was the opposite. For the older stuff, I usually did because you usually got it one at a time. So even though it was less necessary, it was like, oh, I have a minute to do it. Looking at like that field on the spreadsheet and basically being like, I can't pick three people to put in this.
Yeah.
Every actor in this movie is phenomenal. And then, you know, you see that a lot in this movie. Even like characters who seem really minor, like, you know, the random state trooper who's chasing them, who has basically five lines and it's all variations on get him.
Yeah.
Like that dude was X from the X-Files. He's on Supernatural now. Like,
nice.
Stephen Williams, I think his name is.
That movie's filmography and just pick out people and be like, what else have they been in? And you're like, oh my God, they were in that? Really? Oh my God. And it's just, it's nuts. It really is.
Yeah, I'm right about Stephen Williams because it's, if you start Googling Stephen Williams, it comes up Stephen Williams X-Files. So clearly I'm, but like, yeah, just taking that dude as an example, like besides the things I already mentioned, like the things that I mentioned, literally, are not on his best known for when you pull him up on Google. He was in 21 Jump Street, Jason Goes to Hell, and the Twilight Zone movie.
talk about some choice movies right there.
Well, yeah.
Oh, Lord.
So it's just one of those movies where and that's a thing that I really put a kind of a value on, is like having supporting actors that pull their weight. That's a thing where I can kind of say La La Land disappointed, because like it's been 3 weeks since I watched it. Other than the two leads, I don't remember who the hell was in that movie.
Like, really? I can. Like J.K. Simmons, he was in it. He was the maitre d' that fires him. In the piano bar. There's a bunch of them. I mean, the thing is, it's like anything else. You'll look at it and it's like, oh yeah, that guy. I've seen him in like three other things, but they just don't have the fame that Blues Brothers have.
I remember John Legend, because I remember us thinking during the movie, is that fucking John Legend? And then Googling it.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is too, like Blues Brothers has that advantage of like, well, it's famous, so you know them already because it's been around for 40 years now.
Because it was 78.
Yeah, it's like, geez. So, I mean, the time will tell on La La Land, like, how it stands up. And, I don't know, I mean, for me, I will say this, to La La Land's credit, it's something I'd recommend as a new release to people. Like, it would be. Like, if people walked in saying, hey... Yeah,
probably. I mean, that's always a tricky thing. Because, like, for me, it's like, if people, like, even if I didn't like it, if people liked it, I used to recommend it to people, kind of with the caveat that, like, it's not for everybody, it wasn't really for me, but, like, here's what's good about it. And certainly there are things you can say about, like, here's what's good about.
Based, too, on the fact of, you know, are you a person that either enjoys musicals or doesn't mind it in movies? And if your answer is yes to that, it's like, then, you should watch this. You'll enjoy it. It's a good... Especially if somebody's in a relationship, I feel that is definitely a good, like a solid recommendation.
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting thing, because like, I don't think that I would actually recommend it to anybody in a straightforward way. Like, I don't think there are very, very, if you know a person and you know, like this is their kind of thing, then like, you're just an ass if you don't recommend it 'cause you didn't like it. But like, there aren't that many people who I would just overtly kind of recommend this to, because I don't know. I just kind of feel like.
See, I would just to sell it. I mean, because it's one of those things where most people are going to enjoy it, and I hate to admit it, but most people will enjoy it or say they enjoyed it just to seem cool or just to seem as part of the crowd. I mean, I can't tell you how many times people would be like, oh yeah, I liked it, and you could tell, no, you didn't. You're just saying that because everybody else does.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's certainly a thing. Like, I mean, and that, I guess, is one of the things that you can kind of look at now and be like, oh yeah, I can tell you when. You can tell by numbers now that there is no video stores to speak of.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like you can tell more easily by the numbers what is actually resonating with people. Because, you know, it used to be that there was the social engagement part of going to the video store. And so people would come to us, like, already knowing, even if they asked us for recommendations, a lot of the time they'd come to us already knowing, like, yeah, I'm going to pick up this thing because everybody says it's great.
Yeah, no, exactly. They're just looking for confirmation.
And we could, like, have that conversation about, like, yeah, you probably won't really dig it because, like, here's the thing that's going on in it and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
But end of the day, like, they're probably going to do it anyway because, you know, they came into the store knowing that's what they were going to rent.
Yeah.
that's exactly much right. Anymore in the age of, like, streaming because, like, nobody feels any kind of social pressure to either, A, see what everybody else has seen or, B, be right.
Yeah.
Like, cause that's the thing. It's like, if somebody came in and they're like, hey, I really want to see this. What did you think? And you say it was garbage. They're probably going to rent it anyway because they came in the door saying, like, they wanted to see it and they don't want, like, you know, some asshole to discourage them. Really, you know, that's why.
See, here's my question, though. When people did that,
mm-hmm.
and you knew they obviously were looking for, like, oh, yeah, this is great, what would you tell them? Because I wouldn't be that harsh about it.
I was almost never, like, super harsh on stuff.
Yeah, me neither.
When Bill came into the store and it wasn't something that was for me, typically I would start the recommendation with, like, you know, it wasn't really for me. Here's the sort of movie it is. Here are the positive elements of it. And basically I would try to spin it into it, essentially a sales pitch that's tailored towards people who might actually enjoy it.
Yeah.
Like, I certainly don't want to bag on anybody because they don't like stuff that I like.
No, and so, especially, you know, in that industry where it's like, exactly. It's just so, it's like, no, like, I don't like it, but, you know, doesn't mean you won't.
Yeah, well, I mean, and again, it's one of those things where, you know, Zach and I did a whole episode, essentially, on how we liked Batman Superman way fucking more than we liked Captain America. And, you know, 75% of people who have seen both of those movies would disagree with us. So, you know, just because somebody thinks something, even if they're somebody who has kind of a level of expertise in that thing, doesn't mean it's inherently right or wrong.
Yeah, that's true.
So, you know, when people would come in and they'd ask me for my recommendation, I very rarely just told them what they wanted to hear. Like, there were certain customers that you just did it because you're like, you know what? Way, way easier to just tell you, like, yeah, man, it's great, than to get into a whole, because, like, there were certain customers who would come in essentially looking for an argument.
Yeah.
And it's like, if I know you're going to enjoy it and you want me to hear you tell you you're going to enjoy it, I'm not even going to bother with a critique because, like, it's time out of my day that I won't get back and it's not going to accomplish anything.
Yep.
But most of the time, if people ask me a straightforward question, my answer would be, you know, basically reserved. It would be in the vein of, yeah, it wasn't for me, but, and then, like I said, you could spin it into what is an honest sales pitch for, like, the virtues of the film, without necessarily ceding the ground of, like, it's an objectively good movie.
Yeah.
For me, even kind of taking all the variables out, I would say that I think Blues Brothers is a better film than La La Land on the strength of execution, because there's always a balance of concept and execution in every movie. And, you know, again, using Batman Superman as an example, like, a whole lot of people acknowledge that, you know, Batman v Superman tries way harder than most superhero movies to be, like, a big ideas, big, you know, thoughtful kind of whatever movie. There's a lot of variance in whether or not people think that the movie pulled it off. And there's plenty of people who think that the movie is hot garbage and that the fact that they tried to make a good movie doesn't excuse the fact that what came out is not something that they found enjoyable. And I think that's where I would land with something like La La Land. It's like, I can see everything they're trying to do. Some of it's really impressive. But not only is it not for me, I just don't think they stuck the landing. And for me, Blues Brothers is one of those movies that I think, like, their ambition is less, but they stuck every landing.
I just think, I mean, I think as they stand where they are, I think Blues Brothers is a better movie for its execution, hands down. Mm-hmm. I completely agree with you. I think when you start taking away variables,
yeah,
it's a little bit more of a debate. But I think as they stand as they are, Blues Brothers, for me, was a much more enjoyable and better film. Mm-hmm. I would definitely have people sit down and watch Blues Brothers before I would have them watch La La Land.
Yeah, and again, like you're absolutely right in the sense that like there are definitely times that I would recommend this movie, and especially if it's people that I know would dig it, or people who come into the store basically high on Oscar buzz and say like, "Man, would I love it?" And it's like, probably wouldn't love it, but hey, check it out because you'll like it.
Yeah, exactly. No, exactly. But if we're not talking Oscar time, mm-hmm. I would recommend Blues Brothers a hell of a lot more than I would La La Land, especially. Oh, yeah. But that's why it's difficult with these two movies. I don't think it's the same audience.
No, it's totally not. I think that the more interesting question there becomes, which one do you think would be able to translate to the other's audience better? Which is, again, I think that's Blues Brothers, because I think that people who enjoy musicals might enjoy the Blues Brothers as like a subversive take on a lot of
that, and I also feel comedy translates a hell of a lot better.
Yeah, that's true. And kind of the thing about, like, it's like Deadpool. Like, you look at Deadpool, a lot of people dug Deadpool, even people who, you know, there was literally, I went with Angela and a bunch of her friends, and so there was, like, literally a dude in our little group who was bitching during the Batman-Superman trailer that came on for Deadpool about how, like, he hates superhero movies because there's so fucking many of them. And I'm like, dude,
You're here at a superhero movie.
In an X-Men spinoff right now. And like he dug the hell out of it, you know, came out of the movie raving. And I think a lot of that was because it was so subversive. Like not only was it comedy, but also it was actively engaged in kind of poking your expectations.
Right.
And like I said, with La La Land, it lives up to exactly what your expectations are. Yes. There's no subversiveness to this movie at all. It's all paint by numbers.
Yep.
Almost literally, because the color palette is so important.
Yes. Yes. That wonderful, wonderful line that you said that I'm not going to repeat, which was great. By the way,
I can't remember what it was. So I'll have to listen again.
Well, I was going to say pause so I can say it so you can edit it out.
But, here, yeah, we'll have to stop talking for a minute because I can't actually pause the recording without stopping it.
Yeah.
So stop talking.
What you had said was blacks don't matter in this movie, and you meant the color palette, but the way you said it came across as like, oh my God, Russ, what are you saying?
Yeah, I do remember that now that you mentioned it, but I totally, totally forgot that was... I forgot most of that night.
Yeah, well, and that I understand, but to be fair too, Emma Stone was right in front of a black curtain, and I believe she was wearing a black dress, so it was a very poor color choice. It was just the way you said it and the randomness of it, because nobody had talked about anything about like the colors of the movie at all, and suddenly you just bust out with that and I'm like, what?
If that's not in the original, I don't think it is, because it was part of commentary. I might just leave this in because that you like, as long as we're clear on what it means, I don't think there's any harm to it. Like, no, it's it's an interesting, I said nothing about that movie because I basically
left the room
10 minutes in.
Yes, but you did watch it. You did watch it.
I totally watched it. You can hear me in the first, like, 10 minutes of the podcast, and then
you're
basically, I went to use the bathroom, and I just never came back.
No, that's fine. I was going to say, I don't know about you, but it's like, do we have any much more to say about Blues Brothers other than you and I enjoyed it?
I don't have a lot. I mean, the thing that I would say that one thing I wanted to ask you about, because it's one of those interesting elements of the movie, is Carrie Fisher.
Yes.
Because, like, her character is kind of divisive. It's one of those things that came up again when she passed away.
Specifically with this movie?
Yeah, well, because she's such a stereotype of, like, the spurned girlfriend. And it's like she's crazy without any real redeeming anything for why she's crazy. And the only thing that's really attractive about her is that she's super hot. And like to me, I didn't really think that deeply about it because this is a movie based on an SNL sketch.
Yeah.
And like, I think it's safe to assume that like, I actually, if I think about it, it's like, yeah, well, Jake's like, these characters are not good people. Like they're pretty awful humans. And so in spite of the fact that they're the good guys in the movie, like I totally assume that, you know, okay, yes, she's crazy because she's shooting them with a rocket launcher. But then again, you see what they do to these poor cops in the span of a 90-minute movie. It's like she was in a relationship with Jake for however long. Like, what does long-term exposure to the Blues Brothers do to somebody?
Yeah, probably nothing good.
But it's just one of those. I felt like it was worth mentioning because, like, to me, she's a highlight of the movie for me. Like that character.
Oh, yeah.
And it's funny. I talked to Madeline Petch, who plays Cheryl Blossom on Riverdale recently, when doing that set visit, and her character is kind of awful. And so we asked her, like, how do you stay, like, how do you like your character? Cause you obviously, like, you have to relate to them on some level. You can't play a character you hate. At least not on television. I would assume like in a movie, it's a little bit different because you only have to live with so long.
Yeah.
And her answer was like, oh no, I love Cheryl because like every time she's on screen, you know, something's going to happen. It's probably not going to be anything good, but something's going to happen. and I'm like, yeah, that's pretty much like Carrie Fisher's role in this movie. She was like a catalyst for mayhem. It's like every time Carrie Fisher shows up, you're just like, oh shit, what's happening now?
Yep. No, that's true.
And so I like, it never occurred to me that she was like this like stereotype of a spurned girlfriend or like a angry woman or whatever. Just literally totally was not in my, and it was one of those things that I heard a bunch of people talk about. I've heard it before, but then it took on a new life when Carrie Fisher passed away. Cause like her politics were such a big part of that discussion because like the election was like, she passed away in December. So the election had just happened and everybody was, you know, she was very anti-Trump and blah, blah, blah.
Oh,
blah.
Yeah.
The Star Wars filmmakers were all very vocal about like the politics of Rogue One. And, you know, so there was all this kind of, like that was a big part of the discussion around when she passed away. And so I remember hearing people kind of bagging on her role in Blues Brothers a little bit at the time. And I was just wondering if that was anything that you even occurred to you, because it never really occurred to me until somebody pointed it out.
Not really, especially since you have to figure too, that movie when it came out, that was really at the beginning of her career. That movie it's 81. Yeah, that movie is almost a direct result of her association with Hollywood in general, not just stars, but just Hollywood in general. And she talked about it in one of her many like biographies, memoirs, right? Of how like this was just kind of part of that whirlwind ride of like, yep, I'm here. Like, I'm part of this world now. Like, yep, I'm going to do this. Like, I'm going to do this. And I'm with you. Like, it never came across as this, like, typical role. And I don't know why. I don't know if it's because of Carrie Fisher's performance in it, where she just kind of owns it and is like, yeah, she's mad at him, but it doesn't come across like she's spurned. She's just super pissed and, nope, like, you're screwed now.
That's going to be the end of the Emerald City video podcast for this week, celebrating Oscar night 2017. Yeah, I think it's pretty funny too. I'm pretty sure you might have noticed that was a kind of an abrupt ending. Yeah, we ran up against a hard end of a scheduling thing that we just could not get around. And that's why I'm sitting here editing with giggling in the background, because as you heard during the trailer for Archie Digest, my children are here with me. Please join us again probably another 2 weeks before we do an episode of the Emerald City Video Podcast. Zach might come out and do one coming off of CPAC. He's covering that, and that always inspires us to do some fun political thing. But probably with the whole cast, we're looking at next Friday to try and get together about 2 weeks before this actually goes live. In the meantime, there are plenty of back episodes for you to check out, especially if you're one of the people who only listens when all of us are here. Zach and I do a lot of fun stuff. We tend to get a little more analytical because there's only two of us instead of four who are having a split up talk time. So check us out on iTunes. You can subscribe to the show, rate us, leave a review, all that good stuff. And we'll be back very soon.
And don't come back until you've redeemed yourselves.